your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Almost two decades, Midnight Syndicate has composed the soundtrack to your darkest nightmares. The imaginations of fans worldwide have been fueled by its gothic, horror, and fantasy symphonic albums. A staple of the haunted house and amusement park industry, for many, the music of Midnight Syndicate is the music of Halloween. Now, Midnight Syndicate will bring your nightmares to life in a spectacle of sound from beyond the grave.
To Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet, everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on Para-X Radio. Now, my opening song tonight was the original Dark Shadows theme, and actually, Dark Shadows, in a sense, is the topic for tonight. My guests are Paul Tate and Marcus Brooks, and we're going to be talking about shadow people. Now, Paul's been reading, observing, and researching the paranormal and supernatural since his early childhood, and his fascination of the unknown began as far back as 1978 and stemmed from the strange and sometimes frightening nightly experiences he had as a boy. These ghostly encounters provided Paul with the desire to learn more about the spirit world and have since led him on a lifetime journey of discovery and enlightenment in many of the subjects of the unknown. Now, Marcus, my long-lost cousin, was born and raised in London. He studied political science and history at OU London, and between 2000 and 2002, he was an approved candidate for the British Conservative Party. And he's worked throughout the Middle East and ran a successful real estate firm in Dubai. And he worked freelance for a well-established Moscow PR firm. And during his time in Russia, became interested in KGB archives and about UFOs and Soviet mind over matter experiments. Now, on the subject of shadow people, some actually believe that they really are mind over matter. How's that for a segue? So, Marcus, Paul, step out of the shadows and join me.
Hey, Marla, how's it going?
Hey!
Oh, you step out of the shadows noisily. That's good.
Yeah, we always do. We like to burst onto the scene with a grand entrance.
Oh, yeah. There's no stealth shadows there. No. But, you know, I mean, I'm really glad you brought up that topic because, I mean, I just might be out of the loop, but I have not heard of anybody doing a full show on shadow people. I mean, they're mentioned oftentimes when people are talking about their investigations and people have seen them and stuff. But I was doing research. I actually do that sometimes. And there are just so many theories and so many logical and illogical explanations about who they are, what they are, and everything. Both of you, in your belief systems, what are shadow people?
Well, I'll go first, and this is Paul, for everybody who's listening. You probably recognize our voices if you're on the Para-X network. We used to have our own show on there, but...
And we miss you, by the way.
Yeah, no. I know, I miss you all. Maybe one day we'll be back.
Misses everybody.
But in my opinion, my own personal belief, and it may not be what is really the case, but my own personal belief is that shadow people are another form of entity, they are another life form that exists on a frequency that's outside of our own. And this is why, you know, you've heard stories that date back thousands of years of people seeing these shadow people, interacting with these shadow people. These shadow people sort of flit in and out of their peripheral vision, so people catch them out the sides of their eye or the corner of their eye. And this theme has been consistent through centuries of, literature and history or where people have written about these strange encounters. And I myself have witnessed what looked to me like a small shadow being. And I'll tell a bit about the story. We were in England, in Chislehurst, in the Chislehurst Caves. And these are a set of old caves that are carved into the chalk. There's a big deposit of chalk there. And they were carved out many centuries ago. And people used to hide down there. People used to go there in times of trouble, war, shelter, you know, for shelter and stuff like that. And there's a lot of mystery about the caves. They're supposed to be haunted, but I went down there as part of a tour group, and I was at the back of the group, and there was a German tourist next to me as well. And we had these old lanterns, and the guy had said to us that there is zero photons of light down there, which means that it's basically pitch black. There's no light at all. And he said, I want everyone to turn off their lanterns at the same time just to experience this, because you rarely get to experience that feeling of total deprivation of the visual sensory. So we all switched off our lanterns at the same time. And it was as if someone had plucked the eyes out of your head. You really couldn't perceive anything. There was no data that your brain was decoding. So I'd never experienced darkness like that. Anyway, we all switched our lamps back on and we moved down the caves to a place in the caves where there used to be a well shaft going up to the surface, which is blocked off now. And we were standing there and I was at the back of the group with this German tourist standing next to me. And all of a sudden I had the sensation I needed to turn around and look behind me. And what was behind me was a wall. It was a chalk wall. There was no doors or passageways going anywhere else because we were at a dead end. So I turned around, and at that moment, I looked up towards the wall, and I saw what looked like three glowing embers in a pyramid form. So you had one at the bottom, one to the right, and one above it. So if you imagine, it looked like a triangle of dots. And then they started to rotate clockwise. So I said to the German tourist, I said, what's that? And she turned around, and we were both watching this, these triangle of light spinning. And they were spinning faster and faster. And eventually, they stopped spinning, and they opened up. One went to the top, and the two bottom ones went down. And out from the center of this, what looked like something had opened up, appeared a small, shadowy figure. It was about, I would say, 4.5 to 5 feet high, but it had the body, it looked like the body of almost a young child, you know, maybe 12 to 13 years old. It wasn't fully developed, like it wasn't masculine, it was very slender. And it had no features that were visible other than its shape, its form. And it was looking around, but at this point, me and the German lady were both kind of freaking out, you know. Mm-hmm. And then she screamed. The German lady screamed. And at that point she screamed, it turned and looked directly towards us. I could tell by the shape of the head, it was looking mm-hmm. towards us. Yeah. And then it ran to its left, which was straight into a wall, and just disappeared. And this lady was freaking out. I was like, I couldn't even speak. The words wouldn't come out. And the guide was, he came to us and said, what the hell happened, you know? So I had to explain to him what I'd just seen. And at that point, I was like, I don't want to sound like a crazy person, but this is what we saw. And she was confirming as I was speaking, she was actually getting the words out too of what she saw to confirm that we saw the same thing. And when we told this tour guide that experience or what we had seen, he said that had happened many times down there. That had been seen by many people. And to go upstairs, when we go up to the surface and tell them at desk, and they would give us a book to fill in a log in the book to say mm-hmm. what we had seen and give our name and address. And when I opened this book, there was pages and pages and pages of sightings where people had described what they'd seen and written beside their address and name what they had seen, you know. So it was all logged over the years. But I believe these shadow beings do exist, I believe, but they exist on an alternate frequency to ours. And somehow there's a disconnect where we're able to interact with each other in that, you know, they come into our frequency, or maybe momentarily we're able to perceive their frequency. I don't know which it is, but that's mm-hmm. what I believe.
So they're not like a ghost or, you know, an elemental or something. There's something in their own right.
I think that they exist. They are not ghosts. They are not elementals. They are real as me and you, but they just exist on a different frequency. I don't know exactly what they are, but mm-hmm. that's what I believe. I believe they exist. I saw one, and unless me and that woman were both, you know, hallucinating at the same time, the exact same image, there's no other explanation.
Mm-hmm. Marcus, what do you think?
Well, you know, I happen to agree with Paul, but you know, just for the listeners, for them to think about this, that throughout history, if you go all the way back to the Babylonian times, and indeed even in right the way through the Middle East and into India, the jinns are talked about. And often, you know, in the West, we call the jinns genies. And they are supernatural creatures. They are mentioned in the Quran and various other Arab folklore. But interesting enough, coming back to the caves, now... I remember many years ago, I went to the Majlis Al Jinn cave in Oman, and this is literally one of the world's biggest cave chambers, and it's called the Majlis Al Jinn, means literally meeting place of the jinn, the shadow people. Mm-hmm. So you know, if you tally up Paul's story, there is quite a bit of evidence, you could say, mm-hmm. or inference that, you know, these creatures, these supernatural creatures exist. And, you know, there's lots of cases throughout Europe you know, right the way to China. So, yeah, you can't just discount it. I mean, I don't think Paul was on the source. I don't think you had any vodkas, did you, mate?
No, I wasn't drinking at that point.
Yeah, so there we are.
Afterwards, then he started drinking.
Afterwards, I started drinking, yeah. You know what? After that experience, I tell you that this is the truth. This is really what happened. I went home that night, and after that experience, I did not sleep properly for... I was actually afraid to go to sleep on my own for quite some time after that, after seeing that. So it had a strange effect on me, but it was something I couldn't explain, and because I couldn't explain it, I was afraid that it would appear in my room or, you know, in my house. So I was really afraid after that. But I learned...
Summoning it or something, right?
Yeah. I've learned a lot since then, and I don't fear anything like that now, but when I say that, and it's sitting next to me, stroking my neck, but... I don't, you know, if anyone ever sees anything like that, don't fear it, because I will get into that a bit later on in the show, but fear is one of those things that you don't show a gym.
Okay, yeah, they feed on it, but we will get into it. I've got a question from the chat room. Badger, Jeff wants to know, he said, if shadow people are entities on a different frequency, why do they not investigate us, and why are they generally at haunted locations? You know, with actual ghosts.
Well, the thing is, it's a great question. Why don't they investigate us? How do we know they're not investigating us? How do we know that when, you know, we have those experiences? And I'll tell you another story. I spoke to a lady when we were researching shadow people from another paranormal group. Her name was Polly Gia. She sent me a picture. I believe I've sent this picture to you, Marla, before, of a shadow person in a prison. Mm-hmm. And she said that she was in the prison doing an investigation, and she was upstairs in one of the wings, and she was walking along. And this is an old abandoned prison. There's no inmates in there. And she said that she looked into one of the cells that was open, and she saw this shadow creature in there, and he was basically looking around. He was actually as if he was investigating. He was looking around. And she said that she shone her flashlight in on this shadow creature, and she said that he saw that light on his arm, and he lifted his arm up and was looking at it, trying to figure out what that was. And he, for some reason, didn't turn around, but he had his back to her, and he was looking at his arm, trying to figure out where was that coming from. And then she made some type of noise or sound, and he turned around, and the same way happened with me. He just disappeared, like poof. He just disappeared and was gone. She went back downstairs, and when she went downstairs, she looked behind her, and so she must have had a feeling to turn around, and, you know, like I did. But she looked behind her, and he was standing there in one of the doorways, and she had her camera in her hand ready, and she snapped a picture of him. And I've got that picture, and I believe it was either you I sent that to, or it was Sandy. It was one of the two of you that I'd sent that picture to. But you see this humanoid shadow figure standing in the doorway in one of the prisons. So who's to say that they're not investigating us? Who's to say that they're not trying to figure out what we are? You know, and at them strange, there's strange instances where our spectrums or our frequency crosses, so we're able to perceive each other for a brief moment.
Well, Badger just wrote back. He said, wow, so the shadow person could perceive the light, but not its source.
Yeah, it could perceive the light, according to what I was told. It could perceive the light on its arm, didn't know what it was, but actually maybe it did perceive the source when it turned around, because she told me when it looked towards her, that's when it made a dash and disappeared. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty strange. I can't explain it. It's something that we can only ponder on and presume. We can make assumptions, but I can't explain what went on. I can't explain if the shadow people can perceive the source or not. This is just what happened.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there were so many different theories that I was finding when I was looking it up, they, you know, some of them were time travelers, interdimensional beings, spirits that can't fully form. Some suggest that, actually, this was interesting to me, that they're the essences of people who are having out-of-body experiences. That never popped into my head, but that was kind of an interesting thing to ponder for a minute. But I was also reading somewhere where they claim that shadow people are mostly men.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I have.
Or maybe they're generic. I mean, androgynous or something.
I don't know what they are, but they definitely have a male sense about them. You get the sense that they're male. And everyone I've spoken to in all of the experience, we interviewed on film dozens of people who have seen these and interacted with them, and they all said that they were male. None of them said that they had a sense that it was a woman. It was a male, a dominating male presence. And you brought up one really good thing that really is interesting. The out-of-body experience, or the out-of-body travelers that people sometimes link to shadow people. Mm-hmm. We interviewed a woman once who was a clairvoyant. She basically said that her understanding, now I'm just telling you what she told me, is that when we go to sleep, a lot of us have these out-of-body experiences that we can't explain. We just have them. And we leave our bodies and we go out and we travel and yada, yada, yada. But she said that sometimes people wake up and they have the typical sleep paralysis scenario where they open their eyes and they're paralyzed, they can't move, and they all of a sudden, they'll hear a buzzing sound. And this is quite common. You hear a buzzing sound and then they look and they feel a tremendous pressure crawling up them. And when it comes into their field of vision, because they can't move, it's one of those male-type dominating shadow people. And what she said to me, she believes that that is your own spiritual body returning to the physical. And you've actually somehow awoken, somehow, before the reconnect was made. And you're actually witnessing your own, you know, spiritual body re-entering your physical. I don't know whether that's the case, but that's what she told me, and it's quite interesting. You know, could that be an explanation for those crazy, you know, situations that people have where they wake up with sleep paralysis and then they see that crawling up them?
Well, I don't think that's crazy at all, because the yogis, they often, so to say, you know, travel to different astral planes. And, you know, they often tell their family members or their disciples or whoever is close by that when they're meditating, when they intend to leave their physical bodies, that they must not be touched in any way. And if they do start to have fits, that's when they return to leave them alone. Otherwise, they won't be able to get back into their physical bodies. So that really sort of tallies up with a lot of things that you've said today. Particularly in regards to the outer body experience. So you can really sort of like tick the boxes there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is all about...
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is all about, you know, discussion. I mean, none of us can definitely stand up here and say we know the answers. This is all about exploring ideas and concepts and, you know, trying to collectively figure out what this could be, what they could be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. An intelligent discussion.
That's it, with three knuckleheads. That's a good thing. Well, you know, I also heard that many believe that the shadow people act as like benevolent guardians watching and guiding us. But then just as many witnesses have no doubt in their minds of the evil, like soul-wrenching potential of these beings. But I've also read along the evil lines that people have claimed to have been physically attacked by shadow people.
Yeah, I've actually experienced firsthand through interview people's accounts. Well, I shouldn't say firsthand. I've firsthand experienced their testimony of people who have been attacked by these shadow beings. One girl that was interviewed on our one of our films was sexually attacked night after night repeatedly, and it was very hard for her to continue with the interview, but she managed to get through it, and she told us some horrific stories of what used to happen to her. So there is a definite theme of these creatures physically assaulting people. People have been choked. They've been crushed with pressure. They've been dragged. One woman we interviewed for one of our films, and this story, you know, it makes the hair stand up on my neck. I'm not trying to sensationalize this in any way. I'm just going to tell you what really happened. She was experiencing shadow people in her house for month after month after month, and she came to us while this was going on. We were making the film, and we shot her interview, and she had told us on tape, again, another victim that broke down in tears on camera, because it was very hard for her to talk about this. But she said one night she was sitting watching TV, and she had her arm over the back of the sofa, you know, behind her head, and she said that all of a sudden she had the sense that something was in the room with her. Now, she lived alone, so to have that feeling is probably a dread feeling to have. And then she said that all of a sudden she felt this tremendous pressure on her arm, which felt like someone's hand going around her arm, and they dragged her over the back of the sofa. And this was in her house. She was on her own, and this happened to her. And then she told us that she was convinced that these things were going to get her, you know, and lead to her demise. That's what she was telling us. I'm afraid for my life, is what she said in her own house. That woman is no longer alive. And this is a true story.
Yeah, I'm not liking that.
Yeah, she's no longer alive, and she died in the most strange circumstances. We got to know her. It was very sad when it happened, but nobody to this day really fully understands why she died. They think it was something to do with her heart. They think it was something to do, you know, there was a whole heap of stories going around, but nobody knows for sure. She died on her birthday, and she died in her house alone, and she wasn't found for a couple of days. And everyone was in shock because she was only in her mid-50s. She seemed okay, you know, but she had been talking about living in fear. She had been talking about these shadow attacks, and she had told us on camera that she's convinced that they're out to get her, and they're going to lead to her demise. And, you know, not even 8 months after we shot that interview, she was gone. And that's a true story.
Mm. And see, that's so weird. Sorry, Marcus. But it's just like, you always hear how skittish they are and how shy they are, and they just, you know, you don't think of them in that vein.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying, I'm not even for 1 minute inferring that shadow person or that being was the cause of her death. It was just a strange happening, but it was one of those stories. And you do hear of them being skittish, and you know, they actually, they're kind of animalistic when you look at them. You know, the one I saw moved like it was a cat. You know how cats kind of prowl, and they move like really kind of almost ninja-like, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how that shadow person moved. It was almost crouched down and moving with articulate speed. It was just unearthly. It was unhuman, but human at the same time in form.
But coming to the point of, you know, how serious shadow people or jinns are taken. Now, this is a fact. And the listeners can Google this. In 1998, a Pakistani nuclear scientist called Sultan Bashiruddin Mahmud proposed in the Wall Street Journal interview that the jinn could be tapped to solve the energy crisis. Now, as balmy as this may seem, he did say that. Now, this is how serious a scientist, be it a Pakistani scientist, said this, a nuclear scientist. So, of course, they do have a potential, as some people believe. But then again, not enough is known on this because, I suppose, like anything else, I mean, just like when you look at cats, I mean, there's different variety of cats. You've got the big cats and you've got the domestic cats. I should imagine probably along with the spectrum of the jinn, there are various varieties of these shadow people. What do you think of that?
That makes sense. I mean, you know, yeah, how many different forms of creatures are there, and elementals and spirits, and again, interdimensional aliens, whatever you want to call them. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you can't like not, they're not like Stepford people, you know, they're not all coming out of the same mold.
I agree. And if you take a look at the universe that we know as a whole, I mean, the human perception, the level of perception we have of our backyard, our universe, is really ridiculous. And some of the claims that mainstream scientists make about what they believe is the only way is absolutely ridiculous for them to say that. You know, it's bordering on insanity to say that nothing else, you know, a lot of them seem to be rigid in their way and don't believe anything could exist but us and some of the things that they can see. But if you look at, you know, the universe alone, we can only measure, I believe it's 5%. Now, my number may not be correct, but we can only perceive 5% of what exists in the universe. The rest, they term it dark matter, right? And so of the 5% that we can perceive, you know, there's a small fraction of that, which is like, you know, if you had a ruler and it was 10 centimeters long, imagine the middle part of that ruler from 5 centimeters to 6 centimeters. That's all we can perceive, and that's the visible light spectrum. So everything towards the radio waves on the right-hand side of that spectrum, you know, we need instruments to perceive it. We, you know, infrared, you need a special camera. The radio waves, you need a radio tuner. And if you go the other way to the X-rays, well, then you obviously need other equipment to perceive that. So we're practically blind in the whole scope of the universe as to what we can perceive. And that's just the measurable universe that we think exists. What if there's more to it than the 95%? What if there's 1,000% of other stuff that we don't even know or can't even begin to perceive out there? And who's to say that there could be a set of life forms or another humanoid-type entity that exists on any one of those tiny frequencies that go to make up that entire picture of the universe that we, the 95% that we can't even perceive today, and what exists beyond that.
And you maybe know, they don't know that we exist.
Maybe they don't. It's like that movie with Nicole Kidman, The Others.
Yeah. The others, that's right, yeah.
She turned out, you know, towards the end of the film to be the ghost, and it's just a flip. What if we are, you know, the ones being observed by all of these? That could explain a lot of the crazy stuff that goes on, you know. We spoke last week briefly about disappearances, you know, and strange goings on, and, you know, who's to say, where are all these people going? The last I looked, I saw reports of 2,300, listen to this number, 2,300 people a day in the United States go missing. Now, obviously, a lot of them turn up. They're runaways, they're children, they're just people who've had some bad time, and they turn up. But there's a huge number of them. And I think that one of the figures I saw, 45,000 of them a year, they're never seen again. There was one story I was telling Marla, this is for the listeners out there, of a guy in England who went to a gas station. He filled his car up with gas. He went, paid for the gas, bought some, you know, sodas and some other stuff, and then asked to use the bathroom while he was at this gas station. The guy gave him the key. He went to the bathroom. The guy saw him go into the bathroom, and 10, 15 minutes later, the guy's car was still on the gas forecourt. So the guy became a bit, you know, curious, and he went out, knocked on the door of the bathroom, and pushed it open, and nobody was in there. That guy has never been seen since. Nobody knows where he went. And this disappearing. So where are all these people going, you know? Are they disappearing into other realms? Is other things coming into this realm and taking them out? I don't know. This sounds crazy. This all sounds crazy, but it's worth talking about. So
that number is staggering.
Yeah. I mean, anyone, Google it. Go to the Missing Persons Bureau. The FBI have a missing persons list as well. You see how many people. There was like 900,000 people last year alone. were reported missing. That's I mean, just think of that number, nearly a million people. And a lot of them turn up, but there's a large number of them that don't ever be seen again.
Wow.
Well, you know, the interesting fact is, I mean, well, it's a fact from Nick Bostrom. He's at Oxford University now. He's a professor, and he actually has put forward a proposal that we are all living in a computer simulated universe, and that you know, technology has is in the future. So we are in the future, and these computer programs, programmers have generated this program that we're in currently. So if we're part of the program, we won't know that we're in a program because we can't think beyond that realm. So, you know, then you could sort of like think, you know, that you could sort of like assume that laws of nature. So if we are living in a simulated reality, we might expect to see sort of the occasional glitches, small drifts in sort of supposed constraints in the laws of nature over time. So, you know, we talk about shadow people. We talked about perhaps they're observing us. Perhaps this could be a glitch. I'm just talking purely from a philosophical point of view. But it is food for thought, isn't it? What do you think, Marla?
Yeah, I agree. And that kind of reminds me of the theory years ago that we're all like living in a drop of water under some other being's microscope.
Oh, yes. Yes,
yeah.
You know,
it's like the film Men in Black. I don't know whether it was one or two. At the end, they found this necklace, and it was around a cat's neck. And when they looked inside the necklace, there was like galaxies and universes all existing in that tiny space.
That's right.
I mean, our conversation is kind of drifting away from shadow people, but it's opening up some really interesting concepts.
Well, yeah, and that's what it's all about. But I do want to get back to one point about shadow people, because you hear about male shadow people, but then you hear about the hat men, which are, you know, and they're always wearing like gaucho hats or zoot suit hats from the 40s and 50s. Yeah. What is it with them?
Fedoras. They wear
fedoras.
Hats, yeah. From what I've found out personally, from people that I have interviewed, when we done the documentary Your Worst Nightmare, Supernatural Assault, we came across a lot of people who had the sleep paralysis experience. And during that sleep paralysis experience, a lot of people also report seeing these shadowy figures. And a number of the people that we interviewed had seen what's termed the Hat Man. And I think the person who coined that phrase was Heidi Hollis, who's another investigator into the shadow people who I know, and we've spoken about this before. But the fedora shadow hat man entity that appears, a lot of the people that I spoke to have claimed that when they've seen him, something happens shortly thereafter that is almost like when he appears, it's kind of like a forewarning. So something happens to one of their family members, or there's a death in the family, or, you know, something strange happens. But every time the Hat Man appeared to them, it was almost like he was there giving them a warning or something like that. So I don't know why he would be wearing a hat. I don't know if the spiritual world is into kind of Zorro Latin fashion. I don't know. But all I know is that the hat seems to be, it comes up a lot, and you can't ignore that when you're hearing that from people from all different cultures and, you know, all different nationalities, that they see this Hat Man. And it's one of those things I cannot give an answer to, but all I know is that that's what they told me. Every time he appears, something strange in their life happens shortly thereafter.
Well, the Grim Reaper wears a hood, so, you know,
just
a different fashion statement.
That's true. But,
well, even that Freddy Krueger wore a hat, didn't he? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
It's para fashion sense or something.
Yeah. Maybe
they all have to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe they all have to have it. Yeah.
I would like to think of them as just kind of benign things. And the reason I was telling Marcus this earlier, and I swear I'm not crazy, but last night I was staring at the computer screen, and you know how it'll reflect the room behind you?
Yeah.
And I swear I saw a shadow figure go right across the room. And I wasn't thinking about the show. I wasn't working on the show. I wasn't doing anything. I was minding my own business. And it really startled me.
Yeah. It would.
And now you're saying about the bad stuff, and now I'm really not liking it.
Yeah, no, it's frightening. When you first see it, it's frightening. And to get onto the topic of the fear, from what we've learned about people who have experienced them and some of the stuff we've read about them and found out through research is that it seems that this entity or these entities seem to feed on that vibrational frequency. Everything we do in life will give off a frequency. I'm speaking to you all now. I'm creating a frequency, a sound frequency that gets picked up by my microphone, turned into an electrical frequency, and it's sent across the airwaves as another frequency, you know, the internet, and then it comes into your computer as zeros and ones and on another frequency, and then your ears will hear that, or it'll be turned back into sound through your headphones, and your brain will then convert that into electrical impulses and transmit it to you so you can understand it. So everything exists on a, you know, on this frequency. So it's just one of those things we don't know what's possible out there. Anything could happen as far as, you know, perceiving stuff. And when you say you saw this thing in your room and it startled you, well, you may be just because you're now tuning into that frequency, or you were thinking about the show, maybe you're more perceptive to, you know,
a visit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well.
But the thing about fear is we give off this vibrational frequency that can be perceived. Animals actually can perceive it. Like, you know, a dog can always tell when you're afraid. If you're an owner and you have a dog and you're giving off this vibration of fear, the dog will react to it. And it will start to show defensive or protective characteristics. You know, if there's someone in your house, it may strip its teeth at them or start growling. So, but these creatures, it's been said, thrive off of that energy field, the fear. And that's why they kind of tend to work their victims up into a frenzy before they attack them. This is what we heard. And they generate this frequency that they can feed on. And that's why if you ever see one, don't show fear to it. Just try not to show fear to it. Never run from it. Just stand your ground and stare it down. Because if you show fear, that's when it starts to be able to make your life miserable.
Well, even people, you know, if you show fear to a person, they're going to turn into the bully. You know, exactly. They're going to take advantage of that. So I think that's kind of a common denominator.
Yeah, but it's definitely something, if any of you ever experienced, don't run from it. Just stare it down, stand your ground, like you would if a dog. If you met a wild dog, don't run, because it will enjoy that. It will enjoy the chase.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard not to do if something, you know, comes up at you and it's like, holy hell. You know, you can't, it's almost that flight or flee, fright or flee, stay or flee. I never get that right.
Fight or flight.
Yeah, or chuck the dog a couple of sausages.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll work. Now, what do you chuck a shadow person? Come on, let's be real.
Sunlight.
But they say water. No, seriously,
no,
they say water.
Some bitches, Marcus, we melt. No.
Oh, well, this is in the Middle East. They actually say that if you have water in a metallic container near you, the jinns or the shadow people, you know, or genies, evil genies, won't come near you. So that's what they say. I've never put it into use, but I hope I don't have to. But that's what I do. Also, they don't like metal objects, so they say.
Huh.
That's the thing, yeah. So,
sitting here looking around for something metal to grasp onto, should I need
it? It's like a lot of people
have said. Not impressionable or anything, right?
Yeah, a lot of people have said that when just shortly before a shadow person will appear to them, they've actually described some of the things that they sense and feel. And one of the things that they said was, you know, have you ever got the sensation where you're out in the middle of nowhere and you feel like there's a cobweb on your face? That and you start to try and get it off your face and there's nothing there. Well, that's the type of sensation they say you feel just before one disappears, that sensation of a cobweb. And there's other things like you'll start to, actually, you know what? The hair standing up on the back of neck was reported a lot. And that's something that's almost like our own internal receptors or sensory, whatever we have, telling us there's something around us that's dangerous, you know? You get that strange sensation that your hairs are standing up. There's other things that people, they hear weird sounds like shuffling footsteps and stuff like that. Or they'll start to see fleeting stuff out the corner of their eye, just in the peripheral visual range, before they actually see a full-blown, I'm going to call it an apparition or a shadow manifestation in their house. So you get all of these strange little telltale signs before they appear. And that's what a lot of people have told us.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Maybe I was just imagining, because I had no precognition of anything being in here but me.
No, it's only you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, keep reminding me that, you know, reassuring me every so often. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating subject, and it's one of those that I think everybody, well, not everybody, but most people that are investigators claim to have seen a shadow person here and there, or they know somebody that has. It's not that they're these entities that you never run across. I mean, they seem to be quite a bit around.
They are.
And it's what I would really like to see one appear to a medium to see if they could communicate with one. Because it just seems you never hear that. You know, mediums communicate with spirits all the time. But you never hear of anybody saying, well, you know, I tuned into this shadow person there, and this is what he had to say. Or, well, he, because, yeah. That would be an interesting experiment. I mean, of course, you would have to figure out how to call one, you know, or whatever. But they're probably the least understood entity out there, perhaps?
Yeah, and one of the most prevalent, so... No, they're across cultures. There's no boundary for them. And that many people cannot be all delusional.
Okay, so. Reverend Tim just sent me a note, and he said that he has seen them, but he could never maintain an intelligent contact with them. Well, interesting.
Yeah, because they tend to be very shy when it comes to when people actually catch them off guard. They don't seem to like it, but when you know they're troubling people, they seem to love it, especially when they've got you in a state of fear.
Well, yeah. So that's word to the wise, and you know, most of the time we're told do not be fearful of these things in general, because we need to take command over our turf, our territory. You know, we need to make the rules in our world. Yeah. And for the most part, I agree with that. But sometimes, I mean, you see something like that, you're going to freak out, and then you open doors. So it's kind of like, you know, putting on your big boy, big girl pants and dealing with this stuff. Because, face it, we're all in that arena. And we all have to know how to handle it and deal with it intelligently. Yeah. And running and hiding isn't probably the best way to do this, or at least transmit the fear and let something take over.
Yeah, you know? There's nowhere to hide from these things. You can't hide. You just got to face them down. Just say, get out of my house or get out of my space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't understand that they can do that.
Yeah, you can. You can take the power into your own hands. It's the same as if you came across a crazy dog in a dark alleyway. What's going to happen? You're not going to run, especially if he's onto you, because he's going to just instinctively chase you down and attack you. You just got to face him and face him down. Same train of thought with these shadow people. And I talk about them, you know, I've spoken about them a lot over the years. And I sometimes do get the thought, what if they're listening to me, you know, and they're going to come and test me out after the show, you know? But, you know, it's one of those things, I will stand my ground, because I don't really believe they can hurt me if I'm not afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
They can probably make people do stupid things and hurt themselves.
Right. But as long as you're in control of yourself, you know, it's the old saying, nobody can do anything to you that you don't allow them to do.
Exactly.
And that's the way it works. You know, we are running out of time rapidly. And in the last couple of seconds, what are you guys up to? Where can people find you? What's new?
Well, Marcus can answer that. He's more available than I am now because I am now working as part of a business owner in the supplement industry. So I've been kind of out of this realm for over a year now. And we're doing tremendously well. We've got a great product, a great line of products, a great website, and I'm not going to shamelessly plug it on your show, but we're selling supplements now. So I'm kind of out of this arena, and I came back today. This was a special to give the ParaX listeners a treat. And so Marcus is more available. He's doing some stuff on the web, so maybe he can fill you all in on that.
Well, my stuff is more political, you know, because Marla, you know, I love to talk about gold and silver and about the economy.
Yep.
You know, I'm more than happy to come along at, you know, anytime you invite me. You know, it's always a pleasure. We've got a couple of things which I'm doing. One of them is, you know, I like my comedy as well. And one of them is an Indian leprechaun called Paddy Starney. you know, and he comes on and he says, "Well, hello, my name is Paddy Starney and I've come from the San Kishore to Bombay and I want my green card."
Marla, if you haven't seen that, he's got a few video skits uploaded on YouTube. Yeah, if you want to check him out, Paddy Starney.
Oh, he's a bit vile.
Yeah, PADDY S for sugar, T for tango, ANI, Paddy Starney. And you'll see him. He's a vile Indian leprechaun. He curses, he spits, he fires guns, and he gives the politicians a run for their money.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah, I mean, that's not me. That's somebody else that's doing it. You know, I would never dream of doing that. But, yeah, so it's with me, it's basically involved with my, you know, with real estate in the Middle East. The way things are going in the UK with recession, I may need to move out of the UK to sunny Dubai. But we're hoping that something turns up here, things start to improve. But I don't want to put doom or gloom on the show. But, you know, the way that the Bank of England is printing money is going to make the paper money look like toilet paper. But that's my opinion.
We're actually better at it over here in the States at printing money.
We'll let Bernanke print the money, print the dollars.
Yes, exactly.
Go on, mate. Well, helicopter.
As long as both of you are available on Skype, because I love doing shows with you guys. I mean, we get in to so many good things and so many fun things and so many interesting things that just don't go away farther than Skype can reach.
No, we're always being in contact. We're always there at the end of the button.
Good. Yes. I like that. All right. Well, it was a great show, guys. And again, always a pleasure to chat with you both. And guys, everybody come back next week. It's time for another Rev and Witch show. And we've got a couple of really good guests lined up. In the second hour, we're going to be talking to the Haunted Collector himself, John Zaffis. And Christopher Balzano may very well be with us, and he's written a book about haunted items. So that's going to be very, very cool. And Reverend Tim just sent me over a note, and I think we need to send out some blessings to Ryan Buell. He's in the hospital with kidney failure, and he's fighting cancer. You know, I'm from Paranormal State, and so I think he needs a little bit of healing and a little bit of prayer. And do what you can, guys, because prayer does work. So until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.